Amen. If you're able, please remain standing for our Old Testament reading today from Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 to 22. It's printed in your bulletin if you'd like to follow along. So hear now God's holy, inerrant, living word. Jacob left Beersheba and went to Haran. And he came to a certain place and stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed. And behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place that I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of the city was Luz at the first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. You may be seated. This morning, we're jumping into the middle of Genesis, and we'll be there for this week, and I'm anticipating just one more sermon. This isn't a series or anything, but I was interested in this story as I was reading. Maybe you, like myself, at the beginning of the new year, are kind of endeavoring into another reading through the Bible plan of some sorts, and so you're in Genesis in January. It seems like Genesis gets read more than any other book in the Bible, because every January, we set out to read through the Bible. May God bless us this year and help us make it all the way to April, maybe, or who knows, maybe throughout the whole year and we can make it to Revelation even. But in Genesis, perhaps you're reading in Genesis this month, and I want to share with you two stories from the life of Jacob. Both of them happen at night and are formative in the life of this patriarch. Today, I want to talk about just this episode that I just read from Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 to 22. And I want to talk about this, and we're going to talk about it as if it's a story itself. And it'll have four chapters and then an epilogue. So four chapters in this story that we have before us today, and then there'll be an epilogue at the end. And I want you to listen to it and hear this narrative again, maybe afresh. Maybe you've heard this story many times. Many times you know about Jacob's ladder. You've heard that depicted or seen in artwork maybe even. Well, I want to look at it a little bit more closely today. Chapter 1 is really background information for us. And what we have to know if we're going to understand this story is that what we find here, and we'll give this the title for chapter 1, is the deceiver on the run. The deceiver on the run. You may know about Jacob. Jacob is the grandson of Abraham and the son of Isaac. Jacob was the younger of a set of twin boys, and these brothers had contended with each other all the way back to the womb. Even in the womb, they fought with one another. Esau is the older brother of the two. He was born first, but Jacob was born holding on to his brother's heel. He was fighting to overtake his brother even at birth. This did not go unnoticed, and so he was named Jacob, because Jacob is a Hebrew name that means he takes by the heel right from the start. He's grabbing after, trying to seize his older brother. And though they were only born seconds apart, Esau was the firstborn. And therefore, he would receive the birthright and his father Isaac's blessing. In Genesis 28, what we have here today, we encounter Jacob when he was a little over 40 years old. He was at least 40, and as best I can tell, he was a 40-year-old who was still living at home with mom and dad at this point. And at his mother's insistence, just before this story today, Jacob had deceived his father into blessing him. Now, if you remember the story, the deception involved Jacob taking his brother's clothes, of going into his brother's closet and putting on Esau's clothes, and then getting an animal hide and putting the hairy animal hide on the back of his neck and on the back of his hands so that he could go in and deceive his father. Now, this would work only because Isaac was blind. Isaac was old and could no longer see. His eyes were dim. And the only way he could identify people was by touch and smell. And so at his mother's insistence, Jacob put on his brother's clothes, put animal hide on his neck and hands, and went into his father and deceived his father, Isaac, into giving him the blessing, because Isaac thought it was Esau who was there and not Jacob. Now, Esau was the hairy outdoorsman, and Jacob had soft hands. He worked inside the house more, so he had to cover that up. So what we find is Jacob is the deceiver. The heel grabber is the deceiver who's deceived his father. And Jacob had blessed him. And some of the blessings included, or Isaac had blessed Jacob, and the blessings included that Jacob would have the fatness of the earth, that he would have plenty of grain and wine, that now Jacob would have people serve him, that nations would eventually bow down to him, that he would be lord over his brothers even. But what we find in Genesis 28 is that Jacob, the blessed son, is now running scared. He is fleeing home out of fear for his life. He's leaving home empty-handed and afraid. Later in Genesis 32, Jacob actually says that he began this journey with nothing more than a staff. We assume he had the clothes on his back and a staff, and he sets out on this journey. So Jacob is a fugitive, and he's on the run. He was the deceiver, the heel grabber, who had nothing, nothing but the promises his father had given him, and that only by way of deception. And now he's leaving the land promised to his grandfather, Abraham, and his father, Isaac. He's leaving the promised land, and he is without a home or even the prospect of family. He is, as John Calvin said, a severed twig. No hope for fruitfulness or life. He was leaving, though, in search of a wife. His mother said, "You have to go back to my home country, back to Paddan Aram, back to Haran, the city of Haran, where my family is. Go back there and find a wife." So Jacob leaves out of fear and searching for a wife, not, mind you, searching for God. So we find him traveling from Beersheba, which is in the southern part of Canaan, to Haran. Haran would be located where the modern-day border is between Turkey and Syria, far to the north, about a 620-mile journey that he undertook on foot. This morning's passage, he's about 55 miles into it. So we'll turn the page and look at chapter 2, and what we find there is a stop along the way. Verse 10, Jacob left Beersheba and went to Haran, and he came to a certain place and stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep, and he dreamed. Jacob arrived at this campsite, at this site along the way, 55 miles or so into his journey, and he was exhausted. He was without a companion. He was without a tent. He didn't have a bed. He didn't even have a pillow. He laid on the ground under the open sky and rested his head on a rock. I wonder, as he laid there, drifting off to sleep under the Palestinian sky, if he began to think about the unknown path that was ahead of him. A 620-mile journey. He didn't have a device to tell him the way. He couldn't ask for directions. It's that way. 620 miles later, he hoped he finds relatives somewhere. Maybe he's wondering about with fear of what was before him, or maybe he was looking back and he knew very well what was behind him. His brother Esau, and mind you, Esau has said he would kill Jacob, and now it's one thing to be threatened by and pursued by a musician or a pastor maybe, but Esau was a hunter. Esau knew how to move around the land. Esau knew how to use a weapon, and that's who is hunting for him. So maybe he's thinking back. Maybe he's thinking, I shouldn't be sleeping at all. I need to be running more, but he's exhausted. And so there in the night, he drifts off into sleep. It's at this point that the story makes a dramatic change. Moses, as he gives us this narrative, it changes not only the content, but the style even changes. Verse 12, suddenly he says, and behold, Moses calls us to look, notice what happens. And behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it. Behold, 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 each one with a shorter and shorter narrative to point us to that last one. All of those things pointing our eyes upward. Up to that point in the story, the sun had set, Jacob had laid down, there was a stone under him, everything is low, and then suddenly everything is upward, everything's moving up. And in this vision, Jacob saw a stairway or a ladder that was connecting heaven and earth. This ladder was a connection between worlds, between God and man. Maybe you're familiar with Norse mythology. Or maybe you're just a fan of Marvel movies. You've perhaps have seen what is depicted there in those movies in Norse mythology, that there is a connection between Asgard, where the realm of the gods, and Midgard, the realm of humanity, and it's the Bifrost. The Bifrost is this rainbow highway, a transport, a way to get from one place to the other that people could travel on. That's not what Jacob is seeing here. Sorry, Marvel fans. But God opens his eyes to spiritual realities. He sees a connection. He sees this pathway between God and man. And the ladder is not there, notice, it's not there for Jacob to ascend, but it is to direct Jacob's eyes upward. And he sees the Lord standing above it. Now, I want you to remember, as we turn the page in just a moment in our story, that the changes in this narrative begin with God's activity, with God's intrusion into the story. It's God's revelation and God's promise that will move the story forward. Jacob himself was lying on the ground. Jacob was powerless and hopeless. But then he saw the Lord and the Lord spoke. God identified himself to Jacob, and then he promised himself to Jacob. So we will turn to chapter 3. Yahweh speaks. In the second part of verse 13, we have here the words that God spoke. I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The first thing he does is identifies himself, and he says, Jacob, I am Yahweh. When we read Lord there, he says, I'm Yahweh, God's covenant name. I am Yahweh, who is the God of your grandfather Abraham and the God of your father Isaac, and I am showing up. I am here. Listen to me. And after he identifies himself, he then speaks a message to Jacob that involved three things. Three things that he says to Jacob that I want us to notice here. First, he says, the land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now, mind you, at this point, Jacob was without family or home. He wasn't married. He didn't have children. There were no prospects even of children at this point. And he was homeless, nothing but a staff. And God says to him, I promise you that I will give you a home and I will give you offspring. Now, if you know the Old Testament, if you've read Genesis, you'll know that the wording here is very similar, strikingly similar to the same words that God said to Abraham in Genesis 13 and 22. These promises are a repetition of God's covenant promises for his people. And now he says, Jacob, now this is for you. You are part of this covenantal line that I'm promising myself to. Now these promises were to Jacob, even though he had deceitfully gained the blessing. And even though he was fleeing from the land of promise, God said, but I'm going to give it to you. I'll continue. He says, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. Remember Jacob on this journey? Now he is alone and vulnerable. He is by himself. This is not a journey that people would ever take on their own. When we read about Abraham seeking a wife for his son Isaac, remember he sent his servant to Haran as well? But he sent him with a caravan. He probably had a multiple camels with multiple servants going and with wealth. That is not the case here for Jacob. He is going alone and poor. And yet God says to him, I will be with you. You're not alone. And I'll protect you. I will be your guard. Finally, God says to him, and I will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised for you. Jacob was leaving the land of promise. He was leaving home, fleeing for fear, but also now wondering. He was a wanderer. But God said, I will bring you back to my house. Jacob would no longer travel as a fugitive, fleeing home in isolation. But now suddenly he would be a pilgrim. A pilgrim always moving toward home. The difference between a fugitive and a pilgrim, fugitives are running from their past, whereas a pilgrim is traveling toward a future destination. Fugitives are running away and pilgrims are moving toward. Now this whole story, everything that we just looked at was all by God's sovereign grace, meaning it was undeserved. This is just by God's grace. Jacob had done nothing to deserve this vision or these promises. God simply chose to bless him. Let's turn the page again. Our last chapter is the pilgrim responds. How's this pilgrim now, this fugitive who now has these promises, how will he respond? Picking up in verse 16, then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Jacob woke up, and he was astounded at the dream. He recognized that this wasn't just a vision. This was a visitation. God showed up. This is something different. God has appeared and has shown himself and has spoken. He is in this place, and I didn't know it. Now, the response that follows is going to have three parts to it. Here are the three parts that I want us to note very quickly. First, Jacob responded with reverential fear. Secondly, he responds with worship. And then finally, we'll see that he responds with devotion. He responds to God and God's promises with reverential fear, worship, and devotion. Verse 17, and he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Here is one of those times that English, as it changes over time, we can lose something in the translation. The word there that says he was afraid is the translation of a Hebrew word, yare, which means right on the cusp of dread. He was filled with terror. And when he says, how awesome is this place, the same word is used. This place is filled with fear. Not awesome in the way we use it. It means he was filled with awe at God's presence. More like that, kind of. Maybe more gravelly than that even. Awe. He was filled with this reverential fear. Now, Jacob understood fear. Remember, he's running in fear. But notice here, when he fears God, it doesn't cause him to flee from God. Reverential fear is different. It actually pushes him toward God. When he recognizes the splendor and the majesty and the holiness of God, he says, this is a fearful place, and this is exactly where I want to be. This is a very different kind of fear than he had for Esau. He says, this is the gate of heaven. This is the access point where I heard God speak, where the messengers are bringing messages down and taking messages up, perhaps. Secondly, we see that he responds with worship. Verse 18, so early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. Now, we find out that Jacob must have had something else with him. He probably had a little bit of bread and oil, common to take with you on a journey, just enough to try to sustain him for a few days. And he gladly takes his oil that he would have dipped his bread, his dry bread in, and instead he pours it on this stone. Notice he sets the stone upright that had laid down. Now, this stone would be a reminder. It would commemorate that there was a ladder, and the ladder pointed up and God was at the top. So the stone is set up and he consecrates the top of it. He's remembering this is where God is and where God revealed himself. He's worshiping. He's saying this is sacred space. This is where God has made himself known. He even renames it. He called the name of the place Bethel, which in Hebrew means the house of God. And then finally, we see that he responds with devotion. Jacob made a vow, Moses tells us. Now, this vow, it may read to you as if he's putting conditions on God. Now, if God, if you'll do these things, then at the end of my life, I'll let you be my God. That's not reading it the way it's intended here. What Jacob is actually doing is recounting all of God's promises, all of the conditions that God has placed on himself. Really, what he is saying is, since God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and God will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, that I come again to my father's house in peace, since God will do these things, then Yahweh, the Lord, will be my God. He is my God. So he responds with this commitment. This is an affirmation of his faith in God. He goes on to say, and of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. He devoted himself to God through a commitment now to give. And he gives a tithe, a tenth part. This is generosity towards God. And it's a response of his faith in God. A response of gratitude and devotion to him. So he promised to give a tenth of all that he was given, not a tenth of whatever was left over at the end of the day. I'll give you a tenth of all that you've given me. Now, if you were a traveler, traveling